Mama.
Mamon.
Mom.
Mommy.
Mommy.
This is Mother Mine. Reflections on our mothers and how they've shaped us from ordinary people across the globe. 1. Embedded.
I remember mostly her face, probably. And her very straight hair, because I don't have straight hair, so her hair looks very different from mine. It's blondish and straight. Mine's dark and curly, so I don't know. I don't really see myself in her in some ways. I mean, not like in any kind of intentional way. I feel like she and I look different and act different, but we're still similar in a lot of ways. I remember how she doesn't find that many things funny, but when she does find things funny, it's very fun to see her kind of laugh and light up. And she's a little bit, the word conservative isn't the word for it, but she's not exactly pushing the boundaries of what's appropriate and inappropriate to talk about. But then every once in a while, she finds very inappropriate things funny, and that's pretty funny to watch. I think of my mother when there's too many pieces of little decorative items around the house and it drives me crazy. Or somebody's saved a couch that shouldn't have been saved. It makes me think of her. I get frustrated when she won't get rid of old pieces of furniture and old stuff that's making our barns not be able to be used, or cluttering spaces up, which drives me absolutely nuts. Or she disagrees when we have two pizza cutters and I want to get rid of one pizza cutter. My mom was a stay-at-home mom for all of my life. Most things she does with her kids, even though we're all grown up. If it's like horseback riding or farming or traveling or whatever, it's rare that she does something that has nothing to do with her family. So it's a little bit hard to tease it apart, I think. But she was like a trustee member at a small college. And I remember she took me to one of her meetings or one of her events sometime, and she had this little ribbon pinned to her jacket. And I saw her there sort of in this official setting that I'd never seen before. And I think that's when I saw her as sort of like her own person in her own life, doing things that had nothing to do with me. I remember her telling me one time, she was like, I thought you were going to go work in Sacramento on environmental stuff or something like that. And I was like, well, that was never going to happen. But I think, you know, as you're growing up, your parents have an expectation of you that matches with sort of how they see you as a kid and what your talents are and what they see as realistic. And then they project what they would want to do. So I think a lot of what she wanted me to be was based on the things I did and was interested in when I was, you know, in high school, and those things change. So I think, you know, she had to change her expectations to meet with my expectations. I'm reminded of her when I fall asleep on the couch, which happens a lot, and is exactly what she does. She falls asleep on the couch every single day, early, like 7:30, 8 p.m., and she wakes up really early. But when I was a little kid, she had a small couch in front of the TV in her bedroom, and she had to bend her knees when she was napping on it because it was a short couch. And I would love to sleep in that little bend of her knees on that little couch. I don't think she liked having me there. It's pretty annoying. But I would curl up there when I was probably like, you know, 6, pretty small still.
2. Gift.
She never went to college, but she had dreams of being a nurse. She said that she was a candy striper for a few years, and she just always wanted to be a nurse. But then she got married, and she had a baby, and all of a sudden, here she is having to cook. She didn't know how to cook. Not that well, anyway. And we joke with her, I don't know if she does now. My dad's really the cook. But, you know, she was always with my dad. I mean, they've been married for over 40 years. She's never been an independent woman. And her goal was to raise two independent women when she had us. In high school, we would take the city bus. Now, I lived in Newark, New Jersey. And my mom and dad taught me and my sister how to take the city bus from school to our house, or eventually from school to my part-time job at a lawyer's office downtown. So we did that. And every time if we were going home, we had to go home. As soon as we got into the house, pick up the phone, call my mom at work, because we didn't have cell phones back then. And my mom would then tell us what to make for dinner. And she would tell us what chores we had to do, in addition to doing our homework. And women at her office would comment on it and criticize her and say, how can you? You know, those girls just got home from school and they just want to relax and they just want to do their homework. And my mom would say, no, I'm not raising prima donnas. That's what she was. She was like, no, these girls are working. I'm not getting home at 7 o'clock at night to then start cooking them dinner when they've been home for 3 hours already. No, they can cook dinner. I am so grateful for that. And I'm so glad that my mom pushed through all the criticism, you know, let the haters hate. And she stayed focused on her mission that God had put on her heart, which was to raise strong, independent, faith-filled women to be in this world. She was raising us to be prepared for our times before she even knew what our times would be. My mother recently lost her father, and then very suddenly her brother. And seeing my mother grieve has been a new side of her. Not just to see her cry, because of course I see my mom cry, but it's more the grieving and how the loss has affected her, how it's changed her daily routines, how it's changed even the way that she stares off into space. I know she's thinking about either her father or her brother. And the hurt that has to be in her heart is something I can't even imagine. The best advice I have ever received and probably ever will receive is from my mother. She would say, the world will take everything that it can from you, and it will strip you of everything that it can take from you, except for two things, your faith and your education. Those are two things that nobody can ever take away from you. If you do nothing but get a good education and rock that, and never, ever, ever forget your faith, because your faith is about your soul, which will outlive your body, then you're good. Like, those are the two things that she just drilled into our heads. And it really has helped me to orient my life in all stages of my life, whether it was when I was single and then eventually married and now in my motherhood. And she was 100% right, because let me tell you, this world has tried to strip me of everything. I have been through some tough times. I have been through some amazing times. My mom prepared me for each and every one of those times, and that's the greatest gift that she has given me.
3. Sociable.
The joke we have with my mom is, my new best friend, because her stream of acquaintances was so consistent, and it was just so classic for her to come home from any outing and talk about my new best friend. She would always drag us to one more exhibit on the field trip, you know, grab one more thing at the store, stop and talk to one more neighbor on the way home, which could be exhausting, but also got us into some unique and unforgettable adventures that normal people would never have. One of the classic examples of this was in 1989, and our family was on a trip to Israel. We were wandering around the old city of Jerusalem in the Armenian Quarter, and my mom spotted this shrunken old nun walking into this secret little doorway in this compound. And so she goes and chats up this nun. She doesn't speak any Armenian. The nun doesn't speak any English, but she still gets us, you know, her and the five of us kids invited into this convent. We get to explore this secret convent inside these walls, which was probably 400 years old. She got us invited to this like special tea ceremony. We got to look all around the place, and that was because she had a conversation with a stranger. It was 2008. She was almost 60 years old, and we were on a hike in Colorado in the winter, and she slipped on some ice on the trail and broke her wrist and her ankle. And she was like lying there, and my cousin and I had to put our arms around her and help her get down the last bit of the trail. And that was, you know, the first time in my whole life, I was 32 at the time, when she had not had like endless energy and endless capability and strength for whatever she was doing. So yeah, for the first time ever, I just felt this like deep tenderness because I finally had to take care of my mom instead of her taking care of me or the other people around her or her taking care of herself. My grandpa committed suicide when I was 15 on New Year's Day, but since then we just try to keep my mom busy all day because I know she doesn't want to think about it, but I don't really know how it's affected her since then. I haven't ever processed it with her. I don't know my parents' funeral plans or their wishes. I don't know how much money my dad makes. I don't know their retirement plans or what they want to do with any inheritance. So maybe I'll bring up funeral plans at dinner tonight. Whether it was some weird haircut that I wanted to have or some unusual outfit, I wanted to express my special, unique self and my personality and be weird, whereas my mom wanted me to be accepted and for people not to make snap judgments about me because I look different. The example I'll always remember was I was interviewing at an ad agency in Boston in 2001 when I was just starting my career, and my mom convinced me to wear a dress shirt and a tie. And in most cases, that would have been a good move in an interview, but of course, ad agency creative department culture was sneakers and t-shirts, and so I came in and everybody kept kind of looking at me with a side eye and asking me, wait, are you like supposed to be over interviewing an account service? And so I felt kind of betrayed and I was kicking myself. So I was like, dang it. Oh, I shouldn't have done what my mom said. But that example also stands out because in general, of course, like my mom's right. People do judge you based on your appearance. And if you fit in to the context or the convention of that situation, then, you know, it opens a relationship in a different way than if you look really unexpected or if you look unusual. I'm an adventurer, a learner, a seeker, a singer, a runner, but most of all, because of my mom, I'm someone who connects people and invites them in. You know, someday, I hope many years from now, my mom will be in a hospital bed and she'll be inviting the nurses in, offering them some of her food, and making them feel cared for and appreciated.
4. Call.
I always tell my friends, you can tell how good of a mental state I am in based on how often I call my mother. When I'm calling her once a week, I'm doing great. When I call her four times a day, you know there's a problem. And so that freshman year of college was 10 phone calls a day to my mother. I was really, really suffering with mental health issues. I was dealing with an undiagnosed anxiety disorder and was in the depths of my depression. And this was a really difficult time for my relationship with my mother because we have always been very close. Seeing me in that state was very, very difficult for her. And now I'm at a point in my life where I'm doing so much better. And when I'm not with her, I talk to her less, which is kind of a strange thing, but I think she's really come to appreciate our communication when it's not out of desperation, but when it's simply out of love for each other and connection to one another. During the pandemic, I've been in a relatively stable place with my mental health, but I think it's been the opposite for my mother. And so there's been this role reversal of I'm the person who is feeling pretty okay, and I'm seeing her, and I'm seeing her struggle. You know, she has always worked from home, but especially in this time, it's been an isolating time for her. My parents a few years ago moved to a different town, and so they don't have a lot of friends in this area. And then that compounded with the fact that we are socially distant, I think has made my mother really lonely, and I've seen that loneliness in her. I feel like I understand what she was going through during my mental health crisis because I see it with her, and it makes me really sad. But it also makes me hopeful because I got out of it, and I think she will too. I know she will too. My mom has a lot of Yiddish phrases that she's picked up from her mother, and I've sort of adopted a lot of her phrases, a lot of her idioms that she uses, and I think that that's a really fun thing that's been passed down from her to me. I am everything I am today because of my mother. I mean, it's impossible to say who I am because of my mother because I think everything that I am is because of her. And so I don't know who I would be without my mother. I wouldn't be myself. I've had some devastating fights with my mother. I think growing up, we butted heads a lot. I am a very opinionated, strong personality. My mother is a little bit more quiet, but I think both of us are very headstrong and very stubborn. And so neither of us really likes to admit when we're wrong, which can lead to a stalemate of sorts. And so I've had a few fights that have been bad. They usually have ended with my mother leaving the house and coming back a few hours later, and then eventually it fizzles out and things are fine again. We've never really been the type of people to have very honest conversations about our arguments. We usually both end up just taking space and then kind of forgetting about it. Which is hard, because we don't really forget about it. I always think of my mother when I smell her perfume. I don't know the name of the perfume, but I know the smell very, very well. It's the same perfume that my grandmother wears as well, so it always reminds me of both of them. I always think of my mother when I see sparkly shoes and big earrings, because that's what she wears almost exclusively. I'm her baby. I'm the youngest child of two, so I think there's always going to be that relationship with her, that I'm just her baby.
5. Special.
My mom was always at work when I was little because I was raised by my grandmother. And the special thing was when we had a chance to go and visit her at her office. She worked as a clerk, and she had those, now we call them old-fashioned typewriters. And it was really amazing to get the chance to be there. Me and my sister were very quiet girls, especially me. And we could stay there at her office sometimes, and when there was a chance, even type on the typewriter or tidy up the papers. Back in those days when I was growing up, ladies used to wear their fur coats, la pelliccia, la pelliccia di visone, that was a status symbol, especially when going to church on Sundays. I do remember vividly the smell of that skin, especially again when we were at church and I could hug my mom or be right next to her with that furry thing, you know. It was a very special thing. And then I remember vacation. That's the time when Grandma didn't come on vacation with us, and we went on vacation with Mom and Dad. And that was so special because it was our time to be a family of four, not of five. And Mom could cook, although we were usually in a resort where food was included. But I mean, it was a very different situation. And we could do things that we couldn't do with Grandma, like eating ice cream, like chocolate ice cream or creamy ice cream that my grandmother didn't allow. And we even had sodas and stuff like that, you know? My grandmother, my mom's mom, was sick and she was brought to the hospital. And my mom had arranged to have my dad's colleague for dinner that night and cooking a traditional food of our era called tigella, which is kind of a flatbread. And it requires some time for preparation. It's not difficult, but it requires some time. And I really got grumpy at her because she said, "Oh, Graham is at the hospital. How can I make tigella for Prandini?" This colleague of my dad. And I thought, well, what kind of a daughter is she? She's so insensitive. Her mom is at the hospital and she's thinking about food. But it wasn't that. It's her coping mechanism. You know, she keeps going on with what she has in mind despite all the adversities. Even to this day, when we talk on computer or on the phone, she sees me and she says, "Well, did you comb your hair?" Because my hair is pretty depressing compared to, well, her hair is not special either. But I mean, I always wear hats or handkerchiefs or whatever on my head. So it's not especially nice. But she always says, "Well, did you comb your hair?" And I'm 51 going on 52. I did get married and I did have a child, but the way I did it was probably not the way she had in mind, because I had the child out of wedlock and then we got married after, which involved moving to the US, so putting 8 good hours of flight in between us, and especially now during a pandemic, they weigh very heavily on us. But she says jokingly that she's alive and well, waiting for us to go visit another time. My mom pops up in my memory a lot. Oh, I'm doing it exactly like she was doing, setting the table, how a proper meal has to be served. There's nothing proper in the way we do things in our house now, but especially when I make tigelle or tortellini or lasagne, that's the food of our special days, you know. That's what I think about her. And also when I make la crostata, cakes like lettuce pies, she makes them regularly. Or when she makes cookies, she makes lots of cookies, biscotti, and then she posts them on WhatsApp and we can all see them. And she always says, "Well, I wish I could give a package to you too," but she can't send them over here. And that's, I mean, we just joke about that. Now that I'm getting older, especially, I am turning into my mother. I'm turning into my grandmother and my mother and my other grandmother, too. My body shape, this I could have done without, but the things I cook, a certain rigidity, unfortunately, that I got. Again, my mom is not the most elastic, most flexible person in the world regarding new ideas. I'm different than her because I'm a bit choleric. So first I catch fire and then the fire dies down and then I do something, even if I said I was never going to do it. But my mom sticks to that. No, I'm not going to do it, you know? Things like, she's never going to go camping. She's never wanted to go camping because she wants her own toilet. And I did go camping. I didn't especially like the toilet part, but I did it and I survived and I even liked it. I think the women in my family, all of them, not just my mom, they're the ones who had the most influence on my life. And yeah, I miss them all, and I keep them sacred in my heart.
Thank you so much for listening to Mother Mine. I'd like to say a huge thank you to all of our contributors. If you'd like to submit your thoughts about your mother, we'd love to hear from you. Just visit ourmothersourselves.com. That's ourmothersourselves.com. And click on Mother Mine for all of the details on how to participate. I'd like to say a huge thank you to each and every one of our Kickstarter backers. Your generous contributions have made Mother Mine possible, and I am so grateful. Mother Mine is created by me, Katie Sumrow, and produced in conjunction with Our Mothers Ourselves.
Buenas noches, mi amor. Duerme bajo el rosal.